Blog Talk Radio.
Because Hashem is kind, He heeds our prayer.
Good night to all my listeners. This is your host and sponsor, Dr. Yvette Kanarek, and you are tuned in to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. So tonight I'm going to continue my story of my journey. And as I said on that first leg of this journey, which was broadcast last week, Wednesday, I described some of my paths that I took to arrive at a place where I was, I would say, submitted to God. Although I had been someone who was raised practically in the church, because by the time I was 9 or 10, we had switched churches. The church that we were attending, I was raised first in the Roman Catholic Church, and then my mother, who wasn't a churchgoer, she moved to this new gospel church, and I migrated with her because I had given my life to God. But I wasn't a religious person per se. It was just as though I had this relationship with God all the time, and we talked from a child. So when it comes to being religious, in fact, I very rarely go to church, and I didn't like church much. I just thought that it was boring, and people were saying things that just didn't apply to me. But when I was faced with really, really challenges in my life to the point where I wanted to commit suicide, I made this pact with God, and I said, God, something is wrong, and it couldn't be wrong on your side, because I think that you are a perfect being, and I think you are an intelligent being, and you're perfect in all your ways. And if something is wrong, it is wrong on this end, and I am determined to find the truth. And it was at that point that God asked me if everything that I believe of him or I know of him could be contained in this little book that was called the Bible. And I said, no, I had never thought about it. And so he said, if you would close it for a while, I will teach you. And then I said to him, I said, God, I do not want to be led astray, because you've heard of in the past people who they started hearing directly from God, and then they went off on a tangent, and the next thing you know, they're killing people in Guyana, like the Jim Jones. And therefore, I had a bit of concern, and God said, you will know me because I will never violate my principles. So one of the things I want to do tonight, before I get into any more details of my journey, I want to present my rationale and my belief in God. Now, I have been always been a very logical person. And one of the things that we read about and we know in research is that sometimes religious people engage in what is called magical thinking. And there isn't a gap that they bridge between the spirit realm and the physical realm or the natural realm. So in my quest and in my research and my studies, because I was determined to find answer for the way the spirit realm worked, I was determined to find an answer for why I was the way I was and why was I different from most people, because I would hear in the spirit, I was seeing in the spirit. I knew that this was physical and that was spirit. I knew that this what I'm hearing is audible and that what I'm hearing is in the spirit. In fact, one of the fascinating things that began happening to me is that I would hear people's thoughts, and I would hear people's thoughts. And if someone was speaking at a distance, and I mean maybe 50 miles away, and a conversation was going on, I would actually hear the conversation as though I was listening in on the radio. So I knew the difference. I knew when it was my thoughts. I knew when it was thoughts from another source, non-human source. And I knew when I was listening to people's thoughts. And I knew when I was listening to people's conversations. Now, not always was I making the difference between people's thoughts and their spoken word. So if my back was turned and I heard your thoughts, I would have thought that you had spoken. And so there came a time in my relationship with my husband when he would vehemently deny that he said things. And I knew he said it because I heard it. I was hearing his thoughts. And there was a learning curve for me to differentiate between when I'm hearing a person's thought and when they're actually speaking, if I'm not facing them. So that was something that I learned. But I want to talk first about my understanding of God. And it has formed, what I'm about to say, is at the backbone of many of the books that I have read. So in 2019, I published 7 books. And those books, they evolved, and I will talk about them later on, not tonight. I will go into some depth with them later on. But in writing those books, I was working and trying to put forward some kind of tenet or hypothesis or explanation of the origins of humans. And there are different concepts. One is the origin of species. Then there is the origin of the individual, known as embryology. And there was the discipline of ontogeny. And the discipline of ontogeny is a discipline that seeks to describe the beginning of human existence, or the beginning of the planet and the world and the universe. And several theories have been put forward. So I was writing, and I was talking about aggression, and because I was a victim of aggression. And I was working with my editor, and my editor, who is a skeptic, asked me, what is the meaning of instinct? Because he was editing the work, and I was writing the word instinct as though it was a concept that was known. And so I went to check the meaning of instinct. And in doing my search, I realized that the word instinct was put forward by Mr. Charles Darwin. And Charles Darwin assumed that we all had instinct. He never explained what it was, but he said that our instinct was one that was survival of the fittest. And survival of the fittest is not what we think it is. Charles Darwin proposed that there were superior races or superior species. He actually thought that there were different human species and that some species were superior. So he said people who were Caucasians, people that were Europeans and descendants of Europeans were the superior species. And people that were indigenous, non-Europeans, barbarians, and people that were not of that stock, that they were inferior. And he said that the species are evolving into a state of perfection. And in order to do that, the superior race or the superior species has superior genes, and they should wipe out the other members of the species or other species, other human species. And they should just wipe them out because they are weak and they are weak in the gene pool. And there were two things that the superior species were asked to do. They were asked to not assist the races that were, or the species, or the human species that were inferior. And then they must be proactive in doing things to eradicate the inferior species. Now, as I read Darwin's work, Darwin went on to say that men are superior to women. So in the context of fitness, it is in the good interest of the human race to stamp out weaknesses. And therefore, the stamping out of the weaknesses is not merely the barbarians, indigenous people, but if women were a weaker species, then you should get rid of women. And I'm going to say something here because it's just a leap in thought. It would mean that in stamping out women, then there had to be science that would develop to produce children without the use of women. And eventually, we could have a society that was purely male, same-sex relationships, and a scientist who would produce babies in sterile laboratories. And that's just jumping one step away from what Darwin was saying, and we're seeing some of that happening among us. But I didn't get to that point right away because as I wrote these books, I went into very, very deep thought, very, very deep meditation and exploring what Darwin was saying and what I was seeing evolving in front of me in the societies. But the significant thing about what I was writing was about aggression that tended to be toward women, children, and people who were less strong emotionally or people who were disadvantaged. And that is at an interpersonal level. But when you get to the level of races and nationalities, then we can have first world and second world and third world, and we should do everything to get rid of the ones that were not on the top of the food chain. So survival of the fittest had nothing to do with going to the gym and being fit. It has nothing to do with the fitness model, because they have made efforts to change or hide the concept, but I went right back to Darwin. And in my quest, I'm saying, well, if he says aggression is instinctive, because that's what he says, and it is a survival instinct, then survival instinct means that it is understandable and actually required for men to get rid of women. Now, all of this came about because I said in my premise of the work that when people engage in aggression within families, a man turns on his wife, or a woman turns on her husband, or vice versa, or they turn on their children and they begin to abuse them and be aggressive towards them. And when I say they use aggression, mental aggression, psychological abuse, financial abuse, physical abuse, when this begins to happen, my premise was they were violating a survival instinct. And that's when my editor said to me, well, what is instinct? And I went back and I realized that although Darwin talked about instinct, and although it is intertwined in the theory of evolution, that there wasn't a single common definition for the word instinct. So I made those distinctions, and the information could be found in my books called Releasing the Chains of APR. So I have two Releasing the Chains. One is the original version, and the covers are the same. And the second one is Releasing the Chains of APR, or Aggression in Proximity Relationships. And if you wanted to see the differences and the meaning that I posed for instinct, then that's a good book to look at. So I was saying, well, we are accepting a system that is saying it's okay for aggression, domestic violence, intimate partner violence to happen. And unfortunately, as I looked into different disciplines, because the work that I produced, it is interdisciplinary research. And as I looked into the different disciplines, there was not one single discipline that we have on this planet that did not base its foundation in the theory of evolution. And that included religions and philosophies and theologies and so on. So our worldview was being shaped by a belief system that was being done very, very clandestinely, I would say. And we were being shaped in our thoughts, and we were implicitly accepting the theory of evolution. There was another thing that I learned as I studied Darwin and some of the disciplines, the scientific disciplines. All of these disciplines began in religion, and they were providing an explanation as to who God is. And in writing the books, because I am a professional, I am a scientist in my own rights, and I'm a theorist, I needed to examine the roots of my belief. So I went into all of that meandering to tell you what is the root of my belief. And my most significant root is there is nothing that has appeared on this planet, whether it is a natural thing such as a tree or a person or an animal or something that was not natural or inanimate, whether it was a chair, a television, anything, a mirror, anything, There had to be someone who created it. My second premise is that intelligent beings produce intelligent designs. So, for example, humans have gone out of space, they've landed on the moon, they say. They have built the skyscrapers, the pyramids. But you have not seen that same kind of exquisite design happening among the animals. So a pig would have a sty that humans made for it if it was kept in captivity or if it ran wild. The birds built nests, but they didn't build five-story buildings because intelligent beings produce intelligent designs. And the more intelligent the being, the more intelligent the design. And in my work, aggression and proximity relationships, philosophy, and in philosophy, I trace the religion and I show how the religion evolved into science and how all that we study in science today is really, all that we study is really theological beliefs, it's religious beliefs, and they are couched as scientific hypotheses. And if you read the books, you will find an amazing revelation that, yes, you were thinking that science was science, but science really is really religion. And I traced it in a way that people could follow step by step. And then there is, I found, a group of scientists called Intelligent Designs. And these scientists, and it was copious, there were thousands and thousands of articles and research that was done by ID scientists, Intelligent Design, and they said that intelligent beings create intelligent designs. And these are all peer-reviewed and research done under strict laboratory conditions and substantiated because of the rigidity that the scientists put in their studies. So I became fascinated by ontogeny. And in another series, I will talk about the beginning of times, the beginning of times and times, the beginning of our special time, and all the theories that are out there, and what are the most feasible theories. Because I remember when I was growing up, people who were considered to be irreligious, if they met a religious person, they would just say to him, well, where did Cain get his wife? And that will bring an abrupt end to the conversation. And then the religious people will go about calling them all kinds of names. But it's a logical question. Where did Cain get his wife? How did Cain know that there were other people on the planet? Why didn't God say, no, it's just you and your parents, Adam and Eve? Something didn't fit right. But tonight is not that. I will discuss that. But I needed to have for myself, not for myself, because I believed and I knew the strength of my belief, but I needed as an academic person, as a professional researcher, to identify with my belief system and to provide strong scientific support for my belief. And I've done that in the books. So in saying that, I am trying to say to those of us that are listening here that I had and still have very strong scientific basis for the things that I believe. And I'm going to have a play off my good friend, Mr. Stevie Wonder. I love all his music. So we will take a quick break and we will listen to Mr. Stevie Wonder.
Good morning or evening, friend. Here's your friendly announcer. I have serious news to pass on to everybody. What I'm about to say could mean the world's disaster, could change your joy and laughter to sorry people, so bring it down a little bit. Yeah.
Just give the world love. And that was the man, Stevie Wonder, and Love's in Need of Love Today, one of my favorites among many of the music of the man, Mr. Stevie Wonder. And you're listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. And I am your host, Dr. Yvette Kanarek, and your sponsor. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I'm also going to ask you to take a moment and call your friends. Don't eat all this good food. Don't enjoy all of this information alone. And so earlier on, a lot of what I talked about earlier on is just snippets from my work, Aggression and Proximity Relationships. And there are three major volumes, Aggression and Proximity Relationships Philosophy, Aggression and Proximity Relationships Theories, and Aggression in Proximity Relationships Neurodynamics. And just a little bit about that. Aggression and Proximity Relationships is a theory that I have developed, and neurodynamics is the diagnostic tool as well as the therapeutic model that I propose to address aggression. And when I say proximity relationships, I define those relationships based on the cognitive, emotional, and behavioral content of the relationships. So for example, you might meet someone online and this person is talking with you and you develop an affinity and you can tell how this person thinks. And you may never have known that person or met them personally, but you know the nuances of their voice and you feel a certain way, and people develop strong bonds, and then in some cases they become abused because these people, they were just developing the relationship so that they can begin to swindle them. And that's one of the dangers. And that is a form of proximity relationship and aggression. Also, if you have children in a classroom, they develop this bond like a family-like bond. And you can have a lot of aggression happening among the students in the class or the school. So whereas existing models talk about aggression primarily within the family, a woman and a man, to people in same-sex relationships, parents and children, children and parents, I extended the model, and it has a wider net. Now, funding is available for programs, and this funding is good for any country. And if you are interested learning more about how the funding can and will be disbursed at the appropriate time, then you can go onto my website, www.CAsInCharlie, AsInAdam, Y as in Yolande, E as in Earl, and L as in Larry.net. And you can certainly send me a message from my website, and I will receive that message. My business telephone number, it is also a cell phone, so you can text me, or you can WhatsApp, because we have people from all over the planet on the show tonight. Some people are waking up in the mornings, the early morning hours, to log into the program, and they're coming from Asia and Africa and the Pacific and Australia, but we have people calling in from all over the planet, and they can certainly send me a WhatsApp message. So my number for that, it is my business line. It is separate and apart from my personal line. My business line is 407-236-4501. And if you are outside the United States and Canada and Mexico, you would have to put a plus one in front of the number. So you can reach out to me. You can reach out to me for any of the therapies that I offer there on my website. And I do offer training. So you can reach out to me to learn more about the program. So moving along, I spent some time establishing my beliefs and the basis and foundation for my belief. And I'm going to now segue into my journey. I will continue on my journey. So the books on aggression that I've written, that was part of my journey. I was abused, and I was severely abused. And at the time, there was not anything that was in place. And after I left that abusive marriage, I looked at programs and I saw their deficiencies, and I was determined to leave something better before I leave this planet. So I am on my journey, and tonight I'm going to talk about A Trail of Tears. But before I do that, I want to say that although I have 29 published books, and 14 of those are academic books, they're substantial books, I never told my story. So telling my story has several purposes. One, I am ensuring that there is a record of my life and my work, as I have not written a biography. And, you know, life is uncertain, but when we pass, we want others to know that we were here, and this is what we contributed to the planet and to their lives and to the next generation. So it serves that purpose. It also serves a purpose of learning for me, for my learning is reinforced, and my hope is, as I share my journey, that you would learn. Not only would you learn, there would be aspects of my journey that resonates with you. And you will want to take that part or those parts that resonate with you and your experience and apply it to yourself so that you could be empowered. So again, this is Her Excellency Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, and you are listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. Now, in this segment, I would recount a very learning, although it was at the time a very sad experience, and I went through 15 years of tears. 15 years when there wasn't a day that I didn't weep. And in those years, I, especially coming down to the end of the years, I began praying and saying, God, all I am asking for is someone to love me. I felt unloved. And of course, when a person abuses you, one of the things that that person do, they isolate you. They isolate you from people who care for you. And that is part of the abuse. But it gives them more leverage to continue to batter and abuse. So I was isolated from my family emotionally and physically by location, because my husband took us into a very remote area to live where I didn't have access and I didn't have a support system. And from very early in the marriage, he made sure that he was not accountable to me in any way, shape, or form. And I literally mean from day one. He would leave very late at the end of the day, because he would come get me at work and he would take my car and he would go away. And he would come back home in the wee hours of the morning. He didn't say where he was going, when he would return, or what he was doing. And when he returned, you dare not ask him, where were you? What happened? You are looking for either a physical beating or such dehumanizing humiliation to yourself that after a while you were just beaten into the silence. So I was very, very, very naive, and I remained very naive for many of my years. I would say actually it was only in about the last decade that I am becoming very less naive, and I am really very, very, I have low tolerance for many, 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 many things because of the dehumanizing situations that I experienced with my husband. And one day I will talk about some of the experiences. But tonight I want to talk about the fact that I want to talk about his infidelity. So I was naive, and I never thought that while he was out, that he was out there womanizing. I just never thought, because I thought he was a Christian. I met him in the church, and I just didn't even think about what I thought about what he was doing. It was so far from my thoughts. But later on in the marriage, people began giving me hints. And I was kind of realizing that they were giving me hints. I had this woman who began telling me things like, oh, you need to, she was actually giving me strategies to be unfaithful. And she was talking about her own experience. But she was giving me strategies. And several people began doing that. And, or people would say things to make me think. But then I had one friend. I didn't have a lot of friends, because I was so sad, and I was always a loner. I was always a recluse. So I made friends with this one girl, and I can't even remember how I became friends with her. But she would come to my home, and, you know, it was nice because I was there by myself. My children, of course, by the time they went to bed, I was just there alone by myself until late into the night. And I barely slept. I really, really barely slept because I was either strung out, worried, because I was so naive and I was so trusting, and my spirit was in such a good place that I would think that something had happened to him every night. And the same thing would happen. He would turn up home and he would be enraged that I'm even contemplating, well, where were you? Why didn't you call? Why didn't you say something? Why didn't you tell me what time? You know, and it went on for years. And you would say that someone in a situation like that would learn. But apparently I was intelligent, but I was never street smart. And apparently I wasn't learning. And she visited my home. And then one day she confided in me and she said, your husband made a pass at me. And I confronted him. And being the person that he was, because he's now deceased, he went straight to her, and I do not know what he said to that girl. But she stopped talking with me. She stopped coming around. And when I saw her, there was this discomfort, almost guilt, as though she couldn't look me in the eye. So I knew that. And then there was a woman who started telling me what signs I should look for. And I was saying, you would do things like that. Yes, she would do things like that. And interestingly, this was a lady, a woman. She was in the healthcare. She was a nurse. She was told that I was insane. She was told that I had mental problems and that I had a mental disorder. And she believed my husband. He had told a lot of people that I had a mental disorder. But in the interim, during the time that I was married, and because of the abuse, I began running. I ran every morning, 2 miles every morning, and before going to work. And then on the weekends, I would do about 5 miles. And it was time for me to pray. So I'd be running and I'd be praying silently. And people were seeing me running and my lips are moving. And he fed the fuel and he said, oh, she's crazy. She has a mental disorder. So she said to me, for years, I thought that you were insane. I thought you had a mental problem. And I don't know what propelled her to find out more about me. But what was happening in my life was that once people met me, they gravitated towards me and they held on to me. They would come, they wanted me to teach them, they wanted me to pray with them, they wanted healing, they wanted deliverance, and people were coming, but I wasn't really connecting with people in a way because of my grief. So one night, one Saturday night, I'm home alone, and it's going on to about 11:30 midnight, and of course my husband had left very early in the day because apparently on Saturdays was family time for the other women that he was with. And I picked up my Bible and I started praying, and I was agonizing, but I was very careful not to pray anything that was wrong. I didn't want to sin in my prayer. So I picked up the book of Ezekiel, and Ezekiel chapter 23 and verse 2, where God says, Son of man, take up a song or take up a saying about two adulterous women, Aholibah and her sister, two daughters of one woman. And I began praying that about the adulterous women who were in my life and in my husband's life and making my life such a tragedy. And I was going on and on and on, and I was praying this scripture, and of course I was crying and hollering and weeping before God. And somewhere in the middle of it, God said, shut up. I mean, when God says to you, shut up, it was like I was jolted. And he said to me, you are the adulterous woman. I said, how could you say that? How could you say that? I'm married to this man. I married him. I was a virgin and I married him. He said, he is not your husband. You are a bondsmaid, a handmaid. You're a handmaid. He told me I was a handmaid. And he took me to the book of Genesis, and he showed me the story of Abraham and Hagar. So he was Abraham at that time, Hagar and Sarai. When Sarai could not have children, she took Hagar, her Egyptian handmaid. So the first child that Abram had was an Egyptian born child. And the scripture said she took this her handmaid and gave him her to Abram for wife. Most of the time we tell that story, but we tell it from the position of Sarai, the queen, because Abraham was a king in his rights. We never say those in relations to Hagar. And the scripture goes on to say that when Sarai saw that Hagar had conceived, she went to her husband and said, it is your fault. Now, when we look at Sarai, there were a lot of things that were lacking in her character. And one of the things I observed is that God did not speak to Sarai directly. He spoke with Abram. He even spoke with Hagar directly. And Abram said, she's your handmaid. She's in your hands. Do whatever you need to do with her. And the Bible said that Sarai dealt harshly with Hagar, so much that she fled. And she was found in the way by the wells, the among the wells. And what we don't know is that the wells were the equivalent of modern-day pubs, because there were always traveling men going in and out or going through. And the women, the handmaids and the bondsmaid, would stay at the well and they sold their bodies. So for Hagar to do that, there are some psychological things that I'm going to talk about today, which when you read the scriptures with these eyes, you will get some further insight. Abram was 86 years old when Sarai gave him her handmaid. In the scripture, a handmaid was always a virgin who had sex with a man who was the husband of someone else. Now, a bondsmaid is different, and there are different relationships, and I'll talk about that a little later on. I'm hoping I can get to that. Or if we don't get to it, I will surely get to it next week. So it stands to reason that Hagar might have been a very young girl and she would have been a virgin. Also, Hagar might have been in the first trimester of the pregnancy, because an angel came to her and the angel said to her that God heard her afflictions. When you go back to the history of time, people in olden days were wicked people. They did wicked things. It was said that Sodom and Gomorrah, if a person, a traveler, came into town and he was too short, they had contraptions, pardon me, where they're going to string out his limb so he can fit the bed. And if he was too tall, they chop off the limb. They were very, very, very vile people. And if Hagar was a handmaid, she was a slave. And if you know anything about how slaves were treated, when it said that Sarai was harsh towards her, she abused and ill-treated that woman. What does that have to do with you? Well, in the eyes of God and in the eyes of the law, sex is what creates the marriage. So if you married someone, and let's suppose if you had a wedding, a party, you got married and you registered it in the courts and you had a legal contract, it is a legal contract that you are entering into. And if the both of you were virgins and something happened and you did not consummate that marriage, you will get an annulment and you can go back as a virgin and marry someone else. And that marriage was annulled, and that's the law. That is the law. That's the law here in the United States. It's the law in the Caribbean and Africa and many, many places. So when two virgins engage in sex, that's a husband and wife. If a virgin has sex with a man who is in spirit a husband, okay? So I want you to stay here with me. Then that virgin becomes a handmaid. If that handmaid marries a man who is a manservant, and they are in a relationship, they could become bonds people, like a bondsmaid and a bondsman to the master. I'll tell you why. I'm going to tell you about Hagar. There were some principles about Hagar, because later on, when she came back, and we're going to go back to the story, when she came back, Hagar said, I'm not going to have this child stay here and reap the benefits and be an heir with my child. Get rid of this woman. And again, Abraham gave her just a bottle of water and whatever and sent her away with the child. And she was in the desert again. Maybe she didn't want to go back to the wells to be a prostitute. So what she did, she put the child over and she said she doesn't want to see the child die, and she stays away, stayed a distance from the child and so on. So she was treated very, very badly. So let me tell you something. Everything we do, every single thing we do is spirit. Your brain functions on spirit. You see that electricity that is monitored when you go to the hospital? That's your spirit that they're measuring. And when that flatlines, it means that your spirit has left your body and you're now dead. When you go to the doctors and they say, we're going to do an EKG on you, or an EEG, and they put the electrodes on your body, they're able to do that because your body has a charge. There is electricity on your body. At any given point, you have enough electricity in your body to light a light bulb. Everything we do is spirit. So when two young people, 11, 12 years old, they call the wife of your youth, and they come together and they have sex, guess what? They have formed a husband and wife relationship. And if they, the young boy now had several women and the girl had several men or men and women, guess what? Everybody they sleep with afterwards is either a handmaid or a bondsmaid. And I'll tell you what are the characteristics of it. And if you see this is happening in your life, you need to get on my website and give me a call so I could unravel your life. These are the things I want you to look for. If your husband is not taking care of the children, either because he chooses not to or because he can't afford to do it properly, your husband might be a bondsman and you might be either a handmaid or bonds made. If in your generational lines you see that your properties are being transferred to people outside your parents' relationship, so for whatever reason the man had a wife, he went outside, he got a second wife, or she went outside and had a second husband, and they may not even have been married, but somewhere along the line, all the property was transferred out of your hand into the hands of someone else, you need to get on the call. You need to get on my website and call me so I can stop some generational principles, because guess what? You're not a wife. I don't care how much you spent on your wedding. I don't care how white your dress was, how many bridesmaids and best men and whatever you had. You are not a wife of that person. If you are working hard and bringing in little, both you and your husband, both of you are not husbands and wives. And I'll tell you what, we live in a very, 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 very promiscuous society who encourages people to sleep with anybody they want. You know why? Because it is one of the ploys to keep you dispossessed and poor. Now, guess what? I am not a preacher preaching to you, well, you need to be celibate. I'm not telling you that. I'm telling you if you want to be poor for the rest of your life, or if you want to see when you work or when you desire to have something that somebody else down the street get it, feel free. You can sleep with the marriage and the parish. In other words, you can sleep with anybody. You can sleep with the dogs. As far as I'm concerned, but don't come to me and tell me that you're poor and struggling and you need help. I said this was an empowerment program, and I am empowering you. I am telling you that you acquire wealth based on your spirit, because guess what? You metabolize and you use energy to drive from one point to the other. You use energy to think. You use energy to work a machine. You are using your spirit. And when your spirit is not bringing back wealth to you, it is telling me that you either a bonds woman, a bonds man, a bonds servant, or handmaid. And the least you can do is go onto my website and order my books. So you can go onto Amazon. Go onto Amazon and order my books. I have The Whore. I have Sex and Wealth Attraction, Sex and Wealth Creation, Sex and Wealth, and The Neurodynamics of Sex and Wealth. Get all of them. Get all of them. They are good investments. They have secrets that will change your life, and all the success and the prosperity that you're looking for will begin to fall in place. So, sometime after all of this, I am going to change the atmosphere just a little bit, and I am going to play again. We played it at the opening, and I am going to open the mics. I see the switchboard is lit up. I see that there are people on the switchboard, and I will open up the microphones for questions. And people could, of course, send their questions, those who are outside the country and they are logging in on their computers. You can certainly send your information forward, and you can certainly engage in a chat. But let's listen to Mr. Barry Weaver as he changes the atmosphere for us.
Rachamecho Rabbi.
listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. And I am Her Excellency, Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, your host and sponsor of tonight's program, A Trail of Tears. So, in the depths of my abuse, and as the years went by, the abuse escalated, and I learned. So when I talk about my experiences and what I learned that night and beyond, because it wasn't just one night God explained to me that I was not a wife. It took some time for everything to begin to just gel inside of me. And shortly thereafter, the Lord said to me, he said, go and repent of and break your marriage vows. He said, for better or for worse, that's not in the scripture. I say, I will bless you. I will not curse you. Sickness or health? He said, I don't send sickness. I send health. And he had me repent of those vows and breaking the vows. But what I learned more than 30 years ago, it was only in the last decade that there was sufficient technology or level of technology available to the public where we could do the right kind of imaging to understand what happens when people engage in sexual intercourse and what aspects of the brain it affects. We are now getting technology that explain the differences in the relationships that is formed. And that, of course, there is information in my book from quantum physics and quantum mechanics and so on, field theory, that I was able to use. I found the theories. It was making perfect sense of what I had learned from my spiritual journey. And I encourage you, I really, really encourage you to acquire the books. It is an investment in yourself. You can go onto Amazon, you can go onto my website, or you can reach out to me, reach out to me rather than go onto the website. I always give discounts once you reach out to me, so I want you to do that. But I remember one night I had just completed a 40-day fast, and it appeared as though all hell had broken loose in my life. And one night, my husband abused and persecuted me all night. From the time he got home until the morning. And sometime, and I think I did say it last week, but at one time my children came to me, my two younger children, I have one daughter, my youngest daughter, she was just about 3 or 4 years old, and her brother would have been about 5 or 6. And they came one morning, I was praying, and they say, Mommy, would you please tell someone what is happening here? What is happening to you? We are afraid that Daddy would kill you during the night while we are asleep. That is a burden that no child should have to bear. But there are many, many, many children who are hearing the noise, the blood, the profanity, the beating, the breaking of things, and there I the children, they are young, and to them it is amplified. We need to do better. And again, I do have my aggression program. I have funding. The program will be funded. There are some conditions. You will receive appropriate funding at the right time. And that is in the not too long distant future. So if you are interested in running a program, whether it's a school, a training, providing services, safe houses, please reach out to me. But on this particular night, the abuse was really, really, really bad. And I woke up, or I probably got about an hour's rest that night. And as I got out of bed, the Lord placed in my spirit John 11:35. Now, I had gone to Sunday school, and when we didn't learn a verse, because we needed to learn a verse, one verse every week, and we were supposed to recite this verse when we went to Sunday school. And when we didn't remember, we would just say, John 11:25, Jesus wept. It's the shortest verse in the Bible, and we did that. There was always somebody in Sunday school saying Jesus wept, but I had forgotten that that is what John 11:25 said. And when I read it, God said, the heavens wept at the way that you were treated. And we go back to the story of Hagar. It said that God heard her affliction. And the angel said, you are bearing a son. And that's why I'm saying she probably was just in the first trimester, because, you know, babies are born, the fetuses are first girls and they turn into boys. So when we have the murders of the girls, because we want more boys in the economy or in the society, more babies are killed. And some of them were children who would have been boys. And one of the things I learned while I was researching is that the foundation of aggression and victimization, those foundations are laid in the womb. And the angel said, he's going to be a wild ass of a man. He will fight everyone and everyone would fight him. Find that the whole world seemed to be against you. You are constantly struggling. You are fighting all the time. It might well be that you were abused in the womb as a fetus, and it has caused your environment to be a harsh environment for you. And this is what Sarai's behavior had done to Ishmael while he was still in the womb. And who is to say that Hagar wanted to have a sexual encounter with Abraham? He was 86 years old. I had one child who came to me and said, my mother is forcing me to have sex with men, and she looks on and she beats me if I am resisting, telling me that I need to behave myself. And she said, I'm tired being abused. So that kind of taking a handmaid, a girl who's a virgin, and saying, I'm going to give you to my old husband. He's 86 years old, but guess what? You can handle that. And her being by the well, which is indicating that she probably was selling her body. When a child is sexualized or abused sexually, they do become sexualized and engage in all kinds of strange and unsafe sexual behaviors. So we're going all over the place, but all of these were part of my learning. So on that morning when I woke up and God said, Jesus wept, and he said, the heavens wept. Right after he said that to me, he put a song in my head. Now, I had this song in my collection, and I liked it, but I never listened to the words. And I'm going to play that song for us right now.
Life was bitter to the core. There was nothing to live for until love came. And even second times around, happiness could not be found until love came. I was left all alone. Love showed me love, said not so. Without a reason for cause, peace and joy placed on pause until love came. Having no hope at all, and not a loved one to call until love came.
And that was Bibi and Cece Winans, Love Said Not So. And that was the song that God gave to me that morning. And I loved the song. I had played it over and over again But it said, love told me, love said, not so, even with the odds against me. And that gave me hope. And a very significant thing happened that day. My husband left very early in the day, and he just went wherever. And I opened up the doors and I began playing music. And I love music, and I always play loud music. I still play music very, very loud. I play music loudly. I love music. And I spend hours when I'm not working. One of my pastimes is listening to music. I have a wide range of music in my collections. And I was playing that song, and I heard someone ring the bell. When I looked out, it was someone I didn't know this person. And she said, I heard your music, and I said, this is the home of a Christian person. Could I come in? And I said, yes. And she said, I'm just going to come and pray with you. And she became a friend. She prayed with me, and she began visiting me regularly, and she prayed with me, and I began getting some kind of spiritual support from that day onward. But I am going to open the mics now. I see people on the line. So I am going to take just one caller tonight. And my reason for doing so is to make sure that this caller has the option to ask as many questions as he or she would want to ask, and that I give sufficient attention to the questions that are being asked. So I am going to call, I'm going to open your microphone, 347-788-347-788. I have opened your microphones, and please provide us with any questions or comments that you might have.
That's me, you open mine, 788-7925?
Yes, yes, yes.
Oh, how you doing, Mr. Daniel?
I'm doing very well, thank you, and you?
Yes, yes, I'm doing great, doing great. Very interesting. My spirit told me to log in today to hear what you were talking about, and I'm definitely happy that I did. I'm very curious about, about the spirit of poverty within the core of a relationship. That's something that really touched me. And I'm well versed in the Bible and stuff like that as well, but this is something that I never really heard before. And I really thank you for this information. This is different insight, even though it's pertaining to Hagar and Sarah. So my question is actually how, and I know you went through a lot of, spiritual cleansings and uplifting, but how did you come upon the relationship dynamic of the spiritual poverty within the relationship structure?
Yes, and that is a very, very insightful question. And that night when God said to me, you're not his wife, it was like, well, what are you saying? Because we were married. I was a virgin when I married him. I never stepped out of the relationship. And as far as I understood, anyone who is, as long as you're married, you're husband and wife. And he said, no. He said, marriage is a spiritual connection. A relationship is a spiritual connection. And what it means is that, and I talk about it in my books and I explain it, when you have intercourse with anyone, you create mental entanglement or quantum entanglement, and you create a specific electrical field. And when you move apart from each other, you can think about it as a thin thread of electricity or an invisible electrical wire that keeps you connected even though you're miles apart, even though you're 5,000 miles apart. And there is research that substantiates what I am talking about. And I talk about it in my work. There is research that has been repeated and over again to substantiate what I'm saying. So when you separate, this relationship happens, and then there is communication that takes place between the two persons. So they work in symbiotic relationship. A symbiotic relationship is developed, and their needs are met. So one of the research that was done, they took mice. So it was a mice model, and they mated the mice and they separated them. One was kept in the United States, and the other one was sent to Brazil. And they were kept in the same Faraday cages with mazes. So the rats had to run through the maze, and they would put food in locations in the cages. So when, let's say, the mice in the United States got hungry, and we would know because we're seeing the changes in the neurochemistry, when the mice becomes hungry, it sent a message to the mice in Brazil. And then that mice would begin running through the mazes, find where the food is, and send a message back to its mate in the United States, telling the mate where to go to find the food. So it's a principle of wealth building and meeting the needs of your mate and accumulating wealth. And that's why I recommend the books, The Whore. The Whore talks about the different relationships and how they are how it's impacted by the sexual behavior. Of course, if you've had other people that you've had sex with, it crosses up that part. I talk about how those parts are crossed up and how information gets disseminated in the wrong way. And one of the things that happens is that every time the couple engages in sexual intercourse, within 24 hours, a serious fight will break out between them. And what it is that the other people who you have the mental entanglement with, when you send out messages, because we have an inherent desire to preserve our species and to preserve self, when you engage in sex, it triggers memory and activations in the other people that you have had intercourse with. And those kinds of interferences affect how you are functioning in the electromagnetic field. It affects what you are attracting, and it results in a lot of quarrels and fightings and failed enterprises and loss of opportunities. And there is a lot more to this, and there is a great deal and a great depth that I have gone into in my work, because it will explain the laws of attraction, because the laws of attraction always work within poles. you know, polarize, synchronization, synchronicity, and how things synchronizes, how things synchronize and come to you, and how you create wealth. What happens when you have sex? How, what happens to your creative neurons and so on? It's one of the ways that it's the easiest way that people have lost their wealth. And I mean, the dynamics is such. I have people who've read the book and they said, Dr. Canary, we are not, we will not be hopping bed. We will not be bed hopping after this. This is crazy. We didn't know. And I have worked with people because it could be fixed. But it is more than explaining what is between the sheets. It takes more than that. And I do provide a therapy for it. It takes a few sessions. And I help you to unravel all the, it's like someone coming in and unraveling all the wires. You know, when the wires get crossed up and mixed up, you have all the computer wires and they're in a bundle and so on. It's like untangling the wires and reconnecting the neurons properly and redirecting the neuronic pathways so that you could work in your, there is a pathway, or there are pathways in the brain, and these pathways are very specific for wealth building. And all these crossed up wires affect the way that we attract wealth. It affects our power of attraction. So I encourage people to go onto my website to acquire the books, but more importantly, book sessions with me, so that you could get some answers. The website is, again, kyle.net. It's C as in Charlie, H as in Harry, A as in Adam, Y as in Yolande, E as in Earl, L as in Larry.net. And you can reach out to me on my business line, which is 407-236-4501. Again, that number is 407-236-4501. And for those of you who want to listen to the program again, because people tell me that they go back and they listen and they take their time and they take notes, I put these I put the sessions up on my website. So you could log into Blog Talk Radio, blogtalkradio.com/TheNeoNation, or you can go to my website, www.chayel.net, and you can listen to the programs and past episodes from the station. And as I said, I will continue with my journey, because my journey was the pathway that allowed me later on in my career to be able to produce theories and do rigid and robust research to substantiate a lot of things that we know, or we might think about, or we might heard in our spirit or in our spiritual groups or in religion. And there is a wealth of knowledge and information there. So I am going to refer to you again, 347-788. And I said tonight that although there are a number of people who have, they're on the switchboard, I will answer questions from one person only. And again, next week, I will do the same. I might answer, ask questions from more than one person. It is your night, so let me hear your comments or your questions again, sir.
Yes. Why? Wow, that's kind of deep. So my comment was that everything that you said, even when you speak it to me, I can personally identify with. And what came to me when you were speaking was that it's like a break. It's kind of like by you indulging in different connections with different people, you actually cause a break with your spirit according to the direction that you're supposed to go in. And without the solidarity that you mean, like basically I would say raw energy, without this raw energy, the spiritual energy that we need, then we will find ourselves not being able to elevate. It's like basically like a tipsy-turvy thing. Like it's always like it's going to be a constant battle to actually lock ourselves in or to find the path that we really need in order to be, what I would say, peaceful in our own lives. Because without peace, and it doesn't really have nothing to do with finances all the time, because Christ even said that you may be poor and wealth, but you're rich in spirit. So, but if we're not rich in spirit, then we're definitely, you know, poor in spirit and poor in wealth. So I agree with what you were saying as far as the spiritual connection must be of a collective nature. It is not of a collective nature. If you, like, you know, the interesting point you made was saying that after you have intimacy with individual, then a war starts taking place. And the war starts taking place because the other connection that you have in the world is aware of this action, right? And what comes back to you is a discord with your own life, because actually you're not going in the right direction, or you're not married to the right person, or you're not engaging in the right activities. So from what I've been hearing, and I'm definitely going to investigate this with you, is the fact that we kind of make our own path of poverty or success in the way that we connect in the world. So without the correct, you know, neurons, we won't be able to tap into that part of our being, part of our spiritual being, that allows us to actually live an enriched existence. If I'm saying it the right way, or am I on the right track with this set of thought?
The answer to that is yes. And what it is, I'll tell you what it is. We work in, everything we do is spiritual in nature. So if you think about a person, that person's brain would light up. So we experience memory sometimes subliminally. So it might never come up to our conscious awareness. When you begin to engage in intimacy, it will trigger memory in all the people you've slept with. And it will, their brains would light up. And as their brains light up, and all of this is happening subliminally or in the spirit, whatever emotions that they had towards you or still have, whether it's good feeling, if it's good feelings and they know you've moved on, then they want to tear up your relationship because they want you back. If it was bad feelings, then they don't want you to do well. So it evokes, it triggers memory in all the people that you've ever slept with and all the people that the person you are engaging in sex with, as well as your, and those would be sometimes your primary connections, and your secondary and your tertiary, and then that filters out wider and wider. Now, sex is supposed to work like this, where when you have intercourse, your brain becomes optimized to be creative. You produce neurochemicals that would make you be wealthy. But when you have all of these confusions and contortions, and you're evoking all kinds. You just can't attract wealth. And I do training sometimes, so I do group work. And if you went onto my website and you sent messages onward to me, I would respond with you. I will add you to my mailing list. And even that, if that's all you send to me, because I do talks, I do trainings, I do book readings, I do quite a number of things outside of this program. And you can certainly reach out to me, and I would be very, very happy to engage with you. And of course, you can get most of my services at that time. Now, the time is going away very, very quickly. And
tell me the website one more time.
Yes, my website is www.CHARLIE.HARRY.ASINADAM.YASINYOLAND.EASINEARLY.LASINLARRY.NET. And you can reach out to me on my business line. It is a cell phone, 407-236-4501. You can ask me to join my mailing list, and I will send you information from time to time. So the time is upon us, and I want to thank all of you for listening. I am going to say that those of you who are on the switchboard and I didn't get through to you today, that I hope you tune in again with us tomorrow, next Wednesday, same time, same place. I also would ask you to encourage your friends to go and listen to the program and tell them about the program, because as you said, you're hearing things here for the first time, and I've heard those kinds of comments over and over and over again. What you're hearing is definitely not what is said every single day and every single way. So again, I want to thank all of you for joining in. I see you on the switchboard. And actually, what I would do next week is give more time for opening up the microphones for persons who have questions. Again, I am your host. I am Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, Her Excellency Dr. Yvette Kinnerick, and you've been listening to Empowering Lives, Shaping Destinies. I hope that my talk with you today was empowering. I hope that I have made some changes and impacted your life for the better. Good night. And we will close with some soothing music written by Yosi Azule Shirat Hanavad. Thank you.